Hello and welcome to a special draft recap edition of the NBA Outlet. Again, we're not Nick Faye, but I am Dylan Jackson. I'm joined by Dalton Pence. How are you doing today, Dalton?
Doing good, brother. How are you?
Doing good. Ready to talk about these draft picks. Of course, a lot of happened on draft night. You know, leading up to the draft, there were a couple trades. The Suns and Pacers made a deal involving TJ Warren and the 32nd pick. Mike Conley was dealt a day before the draft. Dario Saric was traded to Phoenix before the draft even happened. So there was a lot that was going on. I think there was an NBA record in terms of draft day trades. So there's a lot to discuss.
And for sure, I think that the first team that we're discussing, since we're kind of going team by team in alphabetical order, is a team that also made a couple of trades. Atlanta, I mean, they before the draft started, they sent Taurean Prince to the Nets in exchange for the 17th pick and a couple other pieces. But the main one is the jump up to get that fourth overall pick, in which they eventually took DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I didn't really like the Hunter pick. He was just a little bit of a reach on my board, but I can't ever argue with a team going up and getting their guy. It's just not something I can argue against. If you believe in a player, you have to go up and get them. They had Cam Reddish with the 10th overall pick and Bruno Fernando with the 34th overall pick. All in all, what do you think of this class?
I thought it was a good class. Just like you, I wasn't too big on the Hunter pick. I'm not big on Hunter as a prospect in general, so trading up wasn't really a move that I liked. But I love that Cam Reddish fell to them at 10. I thought that was a good piece, especially for perimeter shooting. But Bruno Fernando, I think, kind of puts the icing on the cake because I know how high you are on him. And for the Hawks to be able to get him at 34, I mean, I have them as an A grade in this draft just because I think they got three guys who can contribute substantially for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like the initial trade up, as I just mentioned, but Cam Reddish, they got him at 10. He was eighth on my board, and Bruno Fernando was still a top 10 player on my board, and they got him all the way in the first part of the second round. So if I have to grade these picks, I'm probably going to give it an A minus just because I'm not high on the Hunter pick.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and talking about A minus, I actually gave the next team, the Brooklyn Nets, an A minus. And I talked in depth on this in the Brooklyn Buzz. I kind of configured the trade to get Taurean Prince into this whole smorgasbord of trying to grade the Brooklyn draft because I kind of incorporated Prince into that. But I love them getting Claxton with the first pick in the second round. I think that that's a good piece for a rotational fit, maybe even being able to slide him over at the four, depending on what the front office views there. I wasn't too big on the Jalen Hands at 56. I ultimately thought he was going to go undrafted. However, you know, he's a guy that, I mean, I think that could develop maybe into a backup point guard role if everything goes to plan for his development. But, I mean, Taurean Prince is going to be better than almost anyone you can get at 17, especially immediately. Claxton at 31 is a high upside, low risk guy, and then Hands at 56. I have the Nets at an A minus. Are you feeling that same way, or do you have them a little lower?
I think they could have done better with the 56th overall pick. There's just a lot of talent left there. Specifically, you know, like Lug Dort, he was still on the board, and they probably could use a depth wing. However, I can't argue against Jalen Hands. He's a high upside pick. But Nicholas Claxton, that was a spectacular pick by Brooklyn. He's kind of like a ball handling big who can do some stuff in the pick and roll game. So I really like that pick for the Brooklyn Nets. 7 foot. He self-described himself as a project that can play, and I love that mentality for the Brooklyn Nets, especially when you've got, you know, players like Kyrie Irving coming in, supposedly maybe Kevin Durant, even though he might sit out a year. So I'm really high on this Nets draft. I'd give it just a flat A, but after them we've got the Boston Celtics, and they took Romeo Langford with the 14th overall pick, Grant Williams with the 22nd overall pick, and Purdue guard Carson Edwards with the 33rd overall pick. And late in the second round, they got Tremont Waters, LSU point guard. What are your thoughts on this class?
Essentially, you know, I wasn't too hot on what Boston did in the draft. I mean, I understand the prospective growth that Romeo Langford could pose. Grant Williams at 22, I think, could be a solid player. I like their second-round pick so much more than their first because I think that Carson Edwards can be a human flamethrower in the league, kind of like a Nate Robinson-esque type prospect. Tremont Waters at 51 is an upside pick. I mean, a crafty scorer, and, you know, if he doesn't pan out, there's not too much of a – I don't even think he has a guaranteed contract at this time. So, I mean, but Carson Edwards, I love the picker. I had the Celtics – I gave them a C, not really too high on what they did. Thought that there were some guys that could have been better at 14. They didn't really address any of the perimeter shooting that they I wish they would have, especially with Romeo. I mean, Grant Williams is a guy who maybe be able to hit a three consistently later on in his career, but not necessarily instantly like they're in the win now situation. But I mean, the reality of the situation is that the Celtics probably weren't going to use all three of their picks. I know that they traded the 24th to Phoenix, which ended up being Ty Jerome. But I just wasn't too high on what the Celtics did on last Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm not too high on it either. Romeo Langford, I think, is a 1-2 combo. Can play make a little bit, but I think he's going to be like a microwave type guy off the bench. Grant Williams, I think he's, you know, just a solid guy. Nothing like too major there. He was kind of inconsistent with shooting at Tennessee. Didn't take too many shots from beyond the arc. Carson Edwards, I guess, is their best pick if I had to grade each one individually. But I like what he can give you from a scoring standpoint. And Tremont Waters, I just think he's a guy. I don't see him really panning out in the league. So I'd probably give this one a C. I think they could have done a lot better, especially with guys like Sekou Doumbouya and Goga Batadze still there.
Yeah, for sure. I gave them a C as well, like I said. Now, unfortunately, Dylan, this next team, if there's no way they were even consideration for a C. I gave your Charlotte Hornets a D, and I thought I was being a little generous. I understand P.J. Washington may end up being a solid, serviceable forward for years to come in the league, but just not a ton of upside, especially if you're trying to convince Kemba Walker to re-sign in Charlotte. There's just not a ton of upside for Washington to be a star in the league. I think that his ceiling may be, I think you said it perfectly, a tier below all-star level, and that's if everything goes right. I don't necessarily understand the Cody Martin at 36. I think that that's kind of one that's a head-scratcher, especially with all the prospects and the plethora of talent that's still left on the board, because, I mean, this is a draft class that had a very – very, very good, underrated second-round talent. And Jaden McDaniels at 52, I mean, the talent's there, and he was a guy that I potentially had as a fringe first-round prospect maybe back in November. But with the legal issues and stuff like that, I just don't understand what the mindset was for the Hornets going into Thursday night.
I think the PJ Washington pick is, I mean, it's a pick. I don't like the pick. I personally would have gone Kevin Porter. I would have gone Sekou Doumbouya, Goga Batadze, any of those three over PJ Washington. He just wasn't high on my board at all. He was like a late first rounder. And I think you could have gotten a better high upside play there at 12th overall. I mean, you're getting, you know, a solid starter, but other than that, he's not really going to move the needle on a potential playoff team at all. And Cody Martin, that was a disgraceful pick. I'm just going to be honest. He should not have been drafted, and to get him in the high part of the second round, that was really, really bad. And Jalen McDaniels, he could be something if he adds weight, but, you know, 6'10", 190 pounds, that's like ball territory. And I think he's going to have to play like the three in the NBA. The problem is he can't rebound for a big man. He's way too thin. He's going to get pushed all over the place. And of course, legal issues. So, I'm going to be a little bit harsh on the Hornets, and I'm going to give them an F.
Wow. I mean, you have to be harsh, especially, I mean, if you're a team that's trying to take the next step and get to the next level or trying to get like a mini rebuild on is it Jalen McDaniels?
Yeah,
because I'm pretty sure I mixed up because I'm sitting here in recruiting mode and I'm sitting here 2020 board thinking Jaden McDaniels, so I'm not really sure what's going on there. But just to touch a little bit on Cody Martin, you know, watching Nevada was really, really rough this year. And even last year, I understand the Cinderella-esque run that they had a couple years ago. But it's just, if the Martin brothers aren't scoring, what exactly are they helping on the offensive end? I think that's kind of the thing, that they don't really bring a lot to the table except for maybe like a crafty sense of being able to put the ball in the basket. But other than that, I mean, they don't have any physical attributes that stand off the page. I thought that the Martin brothers were both going to go undrafted. I'm really kind of interested as what the Hornets really saw in Cody with a 36th pick.
Yeah, that was a really bad pick. I guess he can add some athleticism and maybe some playmaking, but at the same time, it's so much of a reach. And, you know, he's going to be a 24-year-old rookie. You had so many guys available: Talen Horton-Tucker, Jontae Porter. Ball Ball was still there, even though I'm a little bit scared of him now. There's just so many players available that have a lot higher upside than Cody Martin. So that's the worst pick of the draft, but I don't like any of the three. But yeah,
right. So moving on, Chicago, on the other hand, they only had two picks. Got Coby White with the 7th, which was pretty much been pinned there since the end of the NCAA tournament. They got Daniel Gafford with the 38th pick, which is one that I thought was interesting. What's left to be said that we already haven't discussing Coby White to the Bulls? I mean, a combo guard who's going to be able to score. It's going to be interesting to see how he develops his ability to facilitate within the offense and how that runs. But I like Gafford at 38. What are your thoughts on what the Bulls did on draft night?
I think they got a rotational big in Gafford. And, you know, Coby White was the pairing we thought it would be all along. I don't love the fit in Chicago just because, you know, he's just another scorer. And they've got, you know, two of those guys already in the starting lineup. I personally would have gone with another facilitator. But then again, there wasn't really one available here. So they were locked into either Coby White or either, you know, a forward like Sekou Ndomboya, Nasir Little, Rui Hachimura, those types of guys. Maybe Goga Patadze if they weren't 100% sold on Wendell Carter, which they didn't seem to be. But I do like the Daniel Gafford pick, especially in the top of the second round. You know, he looks like a solid rim-running big, prototypical guy, can rim protect some, not too much. But I think he could be a rotational guy, like I said, with the Chicago Bulls. If I had to grade this draft class, I'd probably, you know, give it a B+.
Same.
I love Coby White. I don't love his fit in Chicago.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I agree with you, like the pass first point guard mentality that Chicago needs, because Zach LaVine's not that answer in terms of the lead guard. It looks like all signs point to them sharing the ball. It really just depends on who it's thrown into whenever the other team scores, because they're probably going to give up about 140 points. But I like the rotational fit Gafford could be. I gave them a B+ as well. I thought I was being a little generous because the fit is questionable in Chicago, but I think that Coby White's a good enough player and he's going to be a good enough scorer to kind of mask over those problems. But the next team got a little bit of a higher grade from me. The Cleveland Cavaliers took Garland at 5. And I know you and I and Matt and Nathan talked about the potential concern with Darius Garland and Colin Sexton coexisting in the backcourt, considering that both are, I guess you could say, primed point guards. But it looks like all signs point to Cleveland playing Sexton off the ball. They got Dylan Windler with the 26th pick, which I thought was a good one. And then, obviously, Kevin Porter Jr. at 30, maybe the steal of the draft. So I gave them an A.
I gave them an A+. I think they're the only A+ I gave out. They got two of my top five prospects in Garland and Porter Jr. And Dylan Windler looks like a solid wing off the bench. So they got three guys who can all shoot the ball, which is uber valuable in today's NBA. They got honestly a 1 and a 2. I don't love the fit between he and Sexton, but given that one out of every two draft picks, you know, in the top 10 works out, I think that either Sexton or Garland is going to end up being an all-star, if not both of them at some point in their career. And honestly, you can just trade the lesser of two and probably get a decent return later on. Especially if guys like Kevin Porter or Dylan Windler pan out, like I think Kevin Porter will. Not sure about Dylan Windler, but you know, Porter's an isolation scorer. He's got that lethal step back, and they gave up four second round picks for him and like $5 million, which is a lot to give up for the last pick in the first round.
But it's worth it.
I mean, it's just, it was, in my opinion, a good value because Porter was the third overall player on my board. So I love this draft for the Cavs.
Right. So my question now to you is, let's say down the road, let's look at some alternative realities or stuff like that. But so my question to you, Dylan, is say that Kevin Porter Jr. turns out to be like what we think he'll be, and that's at that all-star level caliber, maybe even a top 10 player, assuming if he can get to that level. Who's the odd man out? Is it Sexton or is it Garland?
I think that it would end up being Sexton just because I don't think he's going to be as efficient of a scorer as he needs to be. I'm not in love with Sexton's playmaking either. I think he's got defensive upside, but in last year's draft, I believe he was a little bit of a reach, and I'm still not too high on his potential.
Yeah, and it seems like Garland's going to be more of a ball-dominant, on-ball lead guard that Kevin Porter would be able to thrive off of.
I agree. I think Kevin Porter also has defensive versatility, which could be useful. He obviously doesn't have it yet, but he's got the upside to be a plus defender with that 6'9 wingspan, 6'6 frame. So I think he's honestly just the perfect fit. I don't love that he's going to Cleveland, a place that's about to lose a lot of its veterans. Right. However, I think it's a risk you have to take, especially that late in the draft.
Yeah, so looking forward, I mean, Dallas didn't have a pick, so I mean, that's an A. Denver, see, I gave Denver an A, and this is why. Denver didn't have a first-round pick. They gave it to Brooklyn away long ago. They had – I think they actually traded into the field. I don't think they had a pick to start out with. They traded for that 44th pick. They got Bol Bol. Here's why I think it's an A. First of all, there's no guarantee for a contract, so you're not paying him big bucks. If you sign him to a two-way contract or even maybe like a two-year, three-year minimum deal, if he shows that he can – you can actually play him in games, if he can start to add some weight and he can stay healthy, I mean, you look like geniuses. If he doesn't pan out, okay, you're not losing any blood. I mean, you've got a solid squad with the Nuggets, so it doesn't look like they're going to need him to do anything substantially – both on offense and defense, but if he pans out, you look like geniuses and you come away with the potential steal of the draft.
Yeah, and this late at the second round, you know, like one out of every 7-8 guys pans out. Exactly. And to get a guy with this much upside this late in the draft, I think it's an incredible value. It's an A for me. And of course, they took Michael Porter Jr. last year. They're not afraid to gamble. So I think at least one of those two guys works out. I think Bol Bol, I'm not sure if he's going to have the longest NBA career, but I think it could be productive. And to get him, again, this late in the draft, it's great. I think he'd be great next to Jokic. I think they could play together. And of course, Michael Porter Jr., we forget about him, but technically he's going to end up being a rookie next year. So I really like this draft. And,
Ben Simmons-esque.
Yeah, could be. And the Mavericks did trade into the draft for Isaiah Roby.
Did they?
Yeah, they got Isaiah Roby with the 45th pick. So
I thought he went to Detroit.
No.
Oh, I must have overlooked that. But, I mean, just kind of going on the fly, I mean, Isaiah Roby's a guy that some had him as a first-level or first-round grade. I wasn't so high on Roby because I don't necessarily buy into the offense, especially not yet what I saw at Nebraska this past year. I see him as a potential Andre Roberson guy who's going to be used for defensive purposes. I think that there's offensive potential, but I'm not so sure he'll be able to reach that level at a substantial rate. I think, you know, I mean, this is – it's a low-risk medium reward. I think I give them a B plus, B if I'm being generous, just because they get him late in the second round.
Yeah, I like this pick. I'd probably give it a B plus as well. Isaiah Roby, you know, rotational forward. I think he's a 3-4 combo for the Mavericks, and probably with their roster next year, where they're probably going to end up signing a max free agent, they could really use the depth. So I like them buying this pick. I think they gave they had 37 and traded it to Detroit for 45 and two future second rounders. So they traded back, got a guy that's higher on my board than most. So I personally like the fit. The Detroit Pistons did very well, in my opinion. They got Sticker Dumboya at 15, power forward from France. Davidas Sirvidis from Lithuania forward. And Jordan Bone, Tennessee, junior guard.
Yeah, I gave them a C plus. I really wasn't too high on this, and the only reason is because, you know, if this would have been Nickeil Alexander-Walker, I probably give this a B plus. But the problem with Detroit, and it's been like that for a couple of years, is perimeter shooting. I mean, they're one of the, I think, bottom five perimeter shooting teams in the league as of last year, and trying to maximize Blake Griffin's potential window. I know that there's the rumors that Andre Drummond's days in the Motor City are limited as they're trying to shop him. But regardless, I think that they need a perimeter shooting. Now, I do think Dumboya may be able to develop a respectable three-point shot. I know that there was the workout where he hit 15 in a row, but that's an empty gym setting. So at least he's going to be able to hit them. And I think that Dumboya can progress into a serviceable NBA player, maybe even a franchise centerpiece if you can pull the right strings. But I just wasn't in love with the pick. I like the player, just don't like the selection here. Jordan Bone at 57 is big. I mean, the guy was a gamer in college, hit big shots. He's a guy that really could pan out at 57, could be a great two-way player that helps out the G League squad and can come up and play some good rotational minutes. Don't really know too much about the guy from Lithuania, Sirvidis or whatever his name is. I watched a couple of clips on him. I don't even think there's a guarantee that he'll be coming over to play in the NBA right away, just because he's a younger guy and sometimes they still like to stay in Europe, but doesn't look to be a guy that's going to project to have a lengthy NBA career regardless.
I love the second Dumboya pick. I just think if you're Detroit, you've got to swing on a guy with upside, and Dumboya is really full of it. I think he will end up being able to shoot the three. He's got defensive potential right now, which should help in terms of, you know, like Blake Griffin. I don't think he's as good as a defender as he used to be.
No, he's not.
I think he fits in at that three spot right now for Detroit. I think he's quick enough. I think he's athletic enough to play the three for Detroit. Right now they've got like Luke Kennard and a bunch of other like, you know, three ball shooting guards. And I like the Jordan Bone pick as well. You know, he tested as one of the most athletic players at the combine. He was like first in everything for the guards, which is just insane. So I love the Jordan Bone pick. I think Sekou Doumbouya could end up being a steal. I'm going to grade this draft an A.
I like Dumboya. The only reason I was so low on it is because if you're trying to maximize Blake Griffin's window potential, I mean, he's what, 29 now? Is that I'm pretty sure he's flirting on 30 if he's not already there. I think his last days of in the 20s are waning, and they're coming to an end pretty quickly. My concerns are, is Dumboya going to be able to pan out in time to see the last days of Blake Griffin's potential, or is it going to be a whole new era? Which, I mean, you kind of hinted at, as Dumboya could just be the franchise centerpiece of his own without the markings of Blake Griffin. So a lot to see there. Probably won't really know how good of a selection this will be until a couple of years down the road, at least. The next team, talking about taking a home run swing, There's not a ton of gambles in the late first round because there's not a lot of a need to take a gamble. But Jordan Poole going 28 to the Warriors. The Warriors also took I don't even want to try to pronounce this guy's name, Alan Smilagic.
Alan Smilajic.
There you go. And then Eric Paschal at the 41st pick. I love that pick. I thought this was a B grade for the Warriors. I love the Paschal fit. I mean, I think that he's a forward who's going to be able to step out and hit the three, maybe kind of like a smaller Serge Ibaka. One thing that's quite overlooked with Paschal is just how smart of a player he is. And he's big for his size. I think he's a true 6'8". Jordan Poole is really a guy you're banking on the potential. Kind of had a – ever since he hit the big shot against Houston in the NCAA tournament back in 2018, he's been a player who's been able to create his own shot, and he's very crafty at getting to the basket or shooting off the dribble. So were the Warriors crazy in your mind to take Poole here? I know a lot of people didn't have him in the first round, if any.
They were the first team that took a player that was not top 60 on my board. I think I had Poole in my 80s.
Why is he so low?
You look at the highlights, and it's very eye-catching. It's really appealing what he can do. Just shooting-wise, you know, he's sort of athletic. But the downsides equally outweigh it's just the downsides of this pick are so, so bad. That I don't know. I think he could be out of the league in 2 or 3 years. And I'm not high on Poole at all. I think he probably could have been there in the second round later on. You know, they picked at 30, 39 and 41. So I'm not high on this pick at all. Alan Smilajic, they actually they hid him from other teams. He was on their G League team. And when other teams scouts went to Warriors G League games, they would rest him and make sure that he did not play because they wanted to draft him. So that just says something about.
I didn't even know you could do that. It makes sense though because that's what Darius Bazley was going to do. It's interesting that you mentioned that. What would you grade the Golden State draft efforts?
I would give the Poole pick an F. I like the Smilajic pick. I wasn't overly high on him, but apparently the Warriors are, and we didn't really see him. So I'd probably give that one a B. And Paschal, I think that's, you know, I had him as, you know, like a 3-and-D wing, maybe a rotational guy next year. I think, I don't know, that's just an average guy to me. In the second round, it's a decent value. So I gave that pick a B. All in all, I'd say C minus, just because that Poole pick, that one's really messing me up.
Right. So now I know for sure that the Rockets did not have a pick, contrary to my my thoughts on the Dallas situation. But the good thing about it is the Rockets were able to pick up Shamori Ponds as
a plus.
I love that. I absolutely
A plus. They got him on a 4-year deal too, right?
Yeah, there were some disputes on what actually were the agreements, so I'd have to double check on that. They also got Chris Clemens out of Campbell, who was the third leading scorer in NCAA history. So, I mean, I think that they're both, I mean, smaller guys, but gamers and nonetheless. So, low risk, high reward, but NA because they did not have any draft picks. Indiana had one, Goja Batadze at the 18th pick. Talked a little bit to Corey Waldron and Nick Fay about this, recapping the draft on Thursday night. And I was ecstatic about this pick. I think that they got a good value for him. It's going to be interesting to see what his actual role and fit is on the team, but I love his ability that he's going to be able to come in right away and excel in the pick-and-roll game, whether that's as a role man, be able to pop kind of like a – I think he's more of a – kind of like a Nick Vucevic comparison, just in the ability to run the pick and roll. But I think that there's some work to do, but I think that there really isn't a floor for Batadze that people fear. I think that he's a really solid prospect, and that's something that a lot don't know about him. So I gave the Pacers a B+.
Yeah, I can get that one. I'm not in love with the fit here. You know, he's going to be behind Turner and Sabonis, unless they plan on moving Sabonis to the four, in which case he'll kind of be in that role that he was in OKC. I like Sabonis and Turner playing more minutes together. I think that works. And I think the only way you draft Goga is if you plan on playing them together in lineups more, thus allowing Goga to get more minutes. I think he's a pro-ready guy, and the Pacers needed a pro-ready player in their rotation this year. They had to hit on this draft pick, and I think he's probably the best player they could have gotten, other than, of course, you know, guys that I was really high on, like Kevin Porter. So I like this pick. I don't love it. I'd probably give it a B-plus as well.
Yeah, I mean, not really too much to discuss here. It's really either you love the fit or you don't. But I think that one of the reasons it seems like a consensus of why Pacer fans are a little bit less optimistic than per se I would be is the fact that they just don't know a lot about Goga. I mean, and that's a real phenomenon. That's something that you see a lot with European prospects, because they're not shoved down your throat 24/7 like other players that play in the American college ranks. So moving on to the Clippers, their first-round pick was surrendered to the Celtics, but they were able to trade up at the 27th pick to Brooklyn, took Mafondu Cabangele out of Florida State, and they took his running mate, his Seminole teammate at the 48th pick in Terrence Mann. What are your thoughts on what the Clippers did on Thursday?
These are really, really smart picks. Cabangele can be a 3-and-D kind of big man, and I think that's really appealing, especially for a team that's probably going to be in the playoffs next year. Terrence Mann is kind of like a versatile defender who can guard positions 1 through 4. He's got length. He's already got an NBA body. Really, both of them do. And I love the fit here. I think both should be on the roster next year. And Terrence Mann is a guy who I was really impressed with the way he conducted himself, like in interviews. I think that's a lot. I think that's the reason he rose all the way to the late second round. He wasn't projected to be drafted until, you know, late May. And I think, I don't know, it really goes to show just how intellectual this guy is, how smart he is. Really, both of them, they were both like, they both flew up draft boards. Cabangele wasn't supposed to be a first round pick until after the combine. So I like this Brooklyn Nets, or I'm sorry, Los Angeles Clippers draft. I'm giving it an A.
Yeah, I gave it a B just because of the fact that I have a question about really the Terrence Mann selection. I think it was a decent one. A solid college player by every means possible. I mean, I know you're a North Carolina fan. I'm a Louisville fan, so we've had to face him for quite some time. He always carried himself well, like you said. I thought there were more talented guys that they could have went after here. I thought that Lewis King would have been a good selection here. I'm higher on him the most. And there were some other guys that maybe like a Shamori Pons as a backup guard position. But other than that, I love the Cabangele fit. The player that I've constantly kind of referred him to is a Montrezl Harrell, just based upon the fiery personality. And it's intriguing that they are going to be on the same roster. And if they do play together on the court together, it's going to be really fun to see just them guys going back and forth with the front court of the opposing teams. But, I mean, you could probably talk me into an A-minus rating on this. Just first thoughts, it's just the man fit. I felt like there was better prospects to be taken. Kind of like how you see the Lakers taking maybe the best overall prospect at 46 and Talen Horton Tucker. I have them at a B+. Are you as high on the Lakers as I am?
They had the second ranked player on my board left available. I think Talen Horton Tucker was late 20s for me. I personally would have gone Jonte, but they need a guy that, you know, impacts now. So, I mean, Talen Horton Tucker, I'm not even sure if he's going to be that. He's like 18 years old, 6'3", 7'2" wingspan or something insane crazy like that. But I don't know what his role is going to be. But I think it's going to be interesting to watch him in Los Angeles next to LeBron James, Anthony Davis. And I think he should be on the roster. I think they're going to keep him, you know, young, cheap talent, second round picks. That's what they always are in the NBA. So I think if there's one player that can make him look good, it's probably LeBron James. So I think he's a versatile defender, probably could guard 1 through 3. He's decent shooting the ball. I think he could improve his consistency. So I don't hate the pick. I don't love the fit, but I'm probably still going to give it an A just because he's the most talented player available that's not injured.
it's going to be hard to love the fit with Horton Tucker regardless of where he goes, because you talked about you don't know what role he'll play. I'm not even sure what type of player he actually is. He came on my board when I saw him play in the Thanksgiving tournaments when he had turned 18. Like he's, I think, the second youngest player in the class. He turns 19 on Thanksgiving weekend. So it's absolutely unreal of the youth there. And I think the Lakers have to keep him on because, honestly, there's five people under contract. And if they're trying to get another big name, then they're going to need all the smaller minimum contracts that they can possibly get. So Horton Tucker, I think that there's a lot of talent. I mean, you can't teach that wingspan for that size. I don't think I've ever seen that in that regard to this extremity. But I think the Horton Tucker could be a possible three-level scorer. Showed it at times at Iowa State. The thing about it is he would make two good plays and then follow it up with like one of the most bonehead plays you'd ever seen. So there's a lot of maturity questions that they're going to have to work through. I think that it's going to be maybe a couple years or two before he can contribute in a way that is recognizable for the Lakers. But the good thing is there's not a lot of pressure for him because he's behind the likes of LeBron James and now Anthony Davis. So I give it a B+. Because, I mean, I like the fit, but to get an A, you kind of have to go above and beyond. So, not really too high in my opinion. But the Memphis Grizzlies get an A. Partly because they get the franchise point guard of the future and Ja Morant. And I know you're not high necessarily on Brandon Clark, but to get him at 21 and the role that I think that he plays in Memphis as a pick and roll guy and a rim runner, I love the fit for the Grizzlies.
I love the fit for both players, but I think they reached on both guys. I didn't have Ja Morant as the second overall player like most people did. He was fourth or fifth on my overall board. And Brandon Clark, I think he's a tremendous fit. He's probably in the best spot he can be in next to Jaren Jackson Jr., next to a guy who can shoot the three ball in the front court. However, I did have him as a second round guy on my board at the very end of the draft. So I don't know. I'm not high on Brandon Clark, but I think this team is going to be fun. It's going to be exciting to watch. I think the Memphis Grizzlies are a league pass team. And when you're not going to win many games, I think that's really all you can ask for, especially at the very start of a rebuild. So I love the Mike Conley trade, mainly because they got that 2022 pick, and that's going to be the double draft, where 18-year-olds and college freshmen are going to be in the draft. And there's presumably going to be twice the talent, which, I mean, I don't think it'll be to that extent. But I think that they could get some solid players in that draft, if not really good players. They're going to have to convey that Boston pick sooner rather than later. But at the end of the day, it's just, I don't know. This team's exciting. It's young. They probably are going to play DeLon Wright next to Ja Morant, and I think that's also a good fit. So I don't know. I'm not high on the value they got, but the fit is really good. So I'm going to give it a B+.
I think one of the reasons why I love the fit for Memphis with Ja Morant is because I think this is an organization that you look at and you think the past couple years, maybe the past 10, 15 years, the last time they've had a true identity or even the markings of it was when Mark Gasol, Jeff Green, and Mike Conley were all respectably in their sort of primes, I guess you could say, for instance. They haven't had really an identity since then, a true one at least. Now you get to say that Morant is not shy in the slightest. He's a guy who he's an explosive athlete, has explosive and electric style of play, seems to be like a mini Russell Westbrook, a guy who you hear all year about at Murray State despite them being not in a Power 5 conference. I would have been fine with R.J. Barrett here. I think that Ja Morant kind of kickstarts the organizational morale and the identity more than Barrett right off the bat, just because I know that R.J. doesn't shy away from the spotlight, but he doesn't have an electric as a personality per se as Morant would.
Yeah, personally, if I were the Grizzlies, I probably would have taken R.J. Barrett. I know he declined to work out, but at the end of the day, he's not going to be able to control where he goes. I probably would have taken RJ at number two, and I'm not sure who I would have taken at 21. I like the Brandon Clarke fit, like I said, and if there's one player he's going to be good next to, it's going to be Jaren Jackson Jr. I probably would have looked at maybe a guy like Nasir Little. I think he would have been a great value and a high upside play this late in the draft. Maybe Shamori Ponds, even though he ended up going undrafted. I think he's a talented point guard you could look at in terms of, you know, just being a fun team with fun players. And, you know, I already said it, but if you're a rebuilding team, get some fun players. Hopefully they pan out. The draft is, you know, it's you're guessing a lot of the time. But then again, I like what the Memphis Grizzlies did. So,
yeah, for sure. You and I had hopped on the Heater's Gonna Heat podcast, I'd say, what was it, a couple days before the draft, to talk about our big board in terms of who we wanted to see the Heat select. We had Kevin Porter Jr. at one. Obviously, that wasn't the case. However, I'm not sure if you had him, but I had Tyler Hero at, I think, my fourth prospect that I would have wanted them to see. They also got KZ Akpala at 32, and if I'm not mistaken, that was a guy in your top five.
Yeah, he was a guy in my top five. You know, he's just, you know, rotational forward. He's going to be able to hopefully shoot the ball. He did his sophomore season at Stanford. You know, he's, I don't know, kind of, I think he could improve his mechanics a lot, actually, and just, you know, his awareness on both sides of the ball. So he makes a lot of boneheaded plays. So hopefully he can improve his consistency. Tyler Hero, I was a little bit underwhelmed by the pick. He was 16th on my board. There were just better players available, you know, like Kevin Porter. So
do you think that the resurgence of Hero's stock looks like it came when the report surfaced of him hitting 80 out of 100 three-pointers in a Boston workout? Do you think that the pressure of the Celtics taking him potentially at 14 kind of forced Miami's hand here? Or do you think Hero was kind of their sold-on prospect?
I'm not sure. Their next pick wasn't for a while, like mid-40s. So I think they just took the highest player on their board, if I'm being honest. So I know they
helped shooting-wise too. So.
Yeah. I mean, they needed shooters, and Tyler Hero is one of the best, if not the best, in the draft. So, again, I'm not too high on the pick, but I certainly understand the rationale behind it. I'm going to give it a B-.
I gave them a B+. Just I think the Akpala selection really kind of puts the cherry on top, because I think that he was a guy that really could have landed in the late teens, early 20s, and I wouldn't necessarily have been too upset, because I buy into the upside. To get him at 32, I think, is pretty big. I think that it's a good selection. Talking about good fits, Jarrett Culver to the Minnesota Timberwolves may be one of the best fits in the draft. I absolutely love his fit next to guys like Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns. There's so much uncertainty with the Timberwolves, but adding a solid player like Culver, who projects to have at the minimum a good serviceable 3-and-D career as a wing. And I like the Jalen Nold pick out of Gonzaga at 43. I think that he's one of the more streaky, underrated shooters in the class. So I gave the Timberwolves an A- here.
They are going to be, you know, I'm thinking it over again. I said the Cavs are going to be my only A+. I lied. Timberwolves also get an A+. Jarrett Culver to the Timberwolves is like the perfect – it's my favorite fit in this entire draft. He can facilitate. He can score. He can shoot the three ball. I think his offensive consistency could use some work. But, I mean, he's a versatile defender. He could probably defend 1-3. He probably needs to add just a little bit more to his frame in terms of muscle. But, I mean, in terms of what he can give you as like a secondary playmaker – as a shooter, I think he could end up being the second option on that team, and possibly make, you know, a mild playoff run, 7 or 8 seed.
Ooh, that's a hot take. You think that the Timberwolves are a potential playoff runner-up or team that could flirt with the playoffs this upcoming season?
Potentially. Again, it all rests on Jarrett Culver, and I wouldn't try and stress that much try and put that much on a rookie. But I do like the Dylan Noel pick as well. You know, he's 6'4". He can really shoot the ball. He was very efficient at Washington. He can defend a little bit, but that's definitely not his calling card. So again, I think he's a, you know, a depth shooting guy.
So Minnesota and the Cleveland Cavaliers hold your A-plus grades, your only A-plus grades. The only A-plus grade I gave out is to the next team, the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, the reason behind this, I think that getting Zion Williamson automatically puts them at an A. I mean, they win the sweepstakes, they win the draft lottery, they get a generational type talent, a guy who took the college basketball level by storm this year and even exceeded expectations from before the season. I really like the Nickeil Alexander-Walker selection at 17. It gives them much-needed shooting when you have guys like Jrue Holiday and Lonzo Ball who aren't necessarily known for that. I'm a little higher on the Jackson Hayes pick at 8 than most. I understand that there's a lot that needs to happen for Hayes to be a good NBA player, especially on the offensive end. But in my opinion, they're not going to need him to do too much offensively, especially right off the bat. So you can really allow him to be the true rim runner and rim protector that he is right now and let him gradually build up that offensive game and use him as a rotational piece to start out with.
The Pelicans are going to be the best transition team in the NBA next year. With Jrue Holiday, Lonzo Ball, Zion Williamson, and Jackson Hayes, that's just like, that's a really fun team to watch.
That's a league pass team for sure, verbatim.
That's number one. Like, they're probably number one on league pass list right now.
They might not win a ton of games just because I think that there's a lot of potential with the squad. There's just, I'm not sure how they fit together, but damn it, they're going to be fun to watch if anything.
Yeah, and they're going to get an A minus for me. I personally would have taken Goga Batadze at 8 overall, but again, they look like they have an identity. They're going to be fast. They're going to be really fast. Jackson Hayes, he ran like a small forward at the combine, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But he's one of the fastest bigs I've ever seen. I'm really high on Nickeil Alexander-Walker. You know, he can shoot, he can pass, he could be a versatile defender in the future. And they got a draft and stash guy from Brazil, Marco Silva. So, right. And of course, Zion Williamson, the basketball messiah.
Zionology.
Yeah, I love it. I love that team so much. Just Lonzo, Jrue Holiday, Brandon Ingram, Zion, Hayes, Alexander Walker, and they dumped Solomon Hill in that trade. They also got the future Cavs first round pick, which could end up, you know, delegating to 2 second round picks. However, that's still like, that's one of the best trades in this draft, moving down from 4 to 8 and still getting your guy with 3 others.
Exactly. I mean, then what left is there to say that you already say? So, this next one. Now, Dylan, let me tell you. There were a couple ways that New York could have screwed this whole draft up. There were reports, and I know you saw them, that they were bullish on Darius Garland, Cam Reddish, Jarrett Culver. And I'm telling you, if the New York Knicks would have taken anybody besides R.J. Barrett, I would have pushed to taking their organization away from the Big Apple because that would have been a disgrace. But they did the right thing. They took R.J. Barrett. I like the Ignas Brazdeikis pick at 47, although I'm not necessarily too high on him, but in the last 15 picks of the draft, could turn into a serviceable forward. I give this an A solely on the fact that they have their premier scorer that they've been longing for so long.
Yeah, R.J. Barrett is an elite young talent. I think he's going to be really good in the NBA. Second overall on my big board. I think the line between him and Zion is closer, at least for me, than most people. R.J. Barrett, I love the pick. He's going to do great in New York. I think he's going to love the media. He's got the perfect personality for that team. I'm a little bit concerned because they don't really have anybody that can do like anything off the ball. Like Kevin Knox is, you know, meh. Dennis Smith Jr. can't really do much without the ball in his hands.
Lonzo Trier is the guy that has an underrated ability to come off screens, I believe, but not necessarily anything too substantial.
Even then, he's kind of like an ISO guy.
He
I guess
is.
Mitchell Robinson can block some shots, but I would have loved for them to get like a more complimentary type of guy instead of Ignas Brazdeikis with the 47th pick. You know, like Terrence Mann, get a versatile defender. I'm pretty high on him. I think Jontay Porter would have been a good pick. Shamori Ponds, possibly, with his passing ability. So, I don't know. I think there were guys that would have better fit this team at 47, but I'm not going to get hung up on a late second round pick. So it's an A for me, just solely based on the RJ Barrett pick. I'm hoping they can get some guys like Patrick Beverley, or maybe an MVP candidate, hopefully in New York soon. I think that team is going to be really fun to watch.
They are. I think that a Patrick Beverley signing would be big, just for the mindset. The New York state of mind is one of the most cliche sayings of any regional dialect that you have, but it holds true that they have to get that superior ideology going again in that Knicks organization. That's something that Pat Beverley embodies, regardless of whether he's in Houston or whether he's in LA or wherever he goes. But OKC, they ended up trading down, not very much, from 21 to 23. Talk about what you liked or didn't like from the Thunder's pick.
They must not have liked anybody on the board at 21, honestly. They probably were looking to trade down again, probably from 23. So, I don't know. I think they were kind of forced into taking Bazley here, but I guess he is their guy. I thought he was going to go higher, actually. I thought somebody was going to take him in the very late teens. So I don't hate the value here, not as much as some other people do, but I think he'd be an average starting power forward in the future. He's got to work on his shot a little bit and get more versatile defensively. So I think he really impressed in 5-on-5s at the combine. So I don't hate the pick, probably a C plus for me.
Exactly. C plus was what I graded the Thunder on their efforts. What is the biggest need that the Thunder require? And that is perimeter shooting. Bazley's a guy that the thing about it is you have to take everything with a grain of salt because he hasn't played organized basketball since high school. So there's always that risk when taking a player like that. But even then, we don't know what type of a three-point shooter he is. And it looks like, by all signs, pointing to a guy who's going to have to work on his shot a little bit more to become a respectable three-point shooter in the pros. So I gave them a C+. This next team, talking about one of the most questionable fits of the first-round draft, Chuma Okeke to the Orlando Magic. I do not love the fit. I mean, unless the Magic think that they can mold him into a 3-and-D wing, which I guess wouldn't be impossible, but I was really wanting to see him become a stretch four, and it definitely doesn't look like that's going to happen in Orlando unless they are calling it quits with one of their younger prospects. But I just wish that the Orlando Magic would have broken the stigma and gone with a guard for once.
I wanted them to take Nikhil Alexander-Walker
a perfect
so
fit.
Bad.
It was literally right there. It was literally right there. And, you know, if Hero's on the board, I think he's a pick there too. But, I mean, Nikhil Alexander-Walker not only addresses the shooting need that they have needed for quite some time, but it also gives them a versatile guard who can play the one or the two and play on the other side of Markelle Fultz, depending on what they even view him as. But Okeke really just doesn't resolve anything. First of all, he's not going to play next year, more than likely, with the ACL tear in late March. However, I mean, I love him as a prospect. I think that if he doesn't tear his ACL, I think he's a surefire lottery pick. But the fit just makes no sense here.
This was an extremely underwhelming pick. I mean, we already said it, but Nikhil Alexander-Walker, he fits the mold of what they want. You know, he can shoot, he can pass. And most importantly, apparently, to Orlando Magic standards, he had a wingspan like 5 inches longer than his actual height. So I don't know. He was sitting right there. I thought he was guaranteed to be taken by Orlando. He was like a top 10 player on my board, but I don't know. I guess I can get behind Okeke. I mean, I don't love it. I think he's going to be a bench guy.
The odd man out? If Okiki's going to be the guy of the future, who's the odd man out? I mean, unless they're sold on maybe trading away Aaron Gordon, but it looks like Aaron Gordon's time finally starting to turn the corner on his ability to hit the three. Is Jonathan Isaac on his way out? I mean, he looked good from year one to year two. Vucevic, who knows?
Like, Okiki and Gordon do a lot of the same things as well.
They do.
Both can shoot. Both are a little bit athletic. You know, both can – I don't know. It's just this pick didn't make any sort of sense to me. I'm giving it an F. Okiki's a lottery talent on my board. But, you know, the Magic have a win-now mentality under Steve Clifford. And he's not going to play next year. Or at least he shouldn't. And they needed a point guard. They're going to have DJ Augustine starting again, especially if they re-sign Nikola Vucevic. So I don't know.
I don't even think they honestly. If you're the Magic, do you re-sign him? Because that's kind of what you drafted Mohamed Bamba to be, was the eventual replacement for Vuce. Depends on how much money he wants. But even then, if he comes out and says that he's willing to re-sign in Orlando, do you even take him back? I mean, you could take him back for maybe a trade piece later on. Maybe a sign-in trade would be a potential thing that we look at. I mean, that's kind of harder to do, but it's a possibility. But even then, are they just – I guess they're just trying to start the biggest lineup in NBA history at this point, because they're not addressing the guard need that they've so – that has so desperately held them back for quite some time.
Matisse Thybulle to the 76ers. We're just going to move on.
Might as well, dude. I can go on and on about why I did not like that fit for Orlando at all.
Yeah, I mean, they get an F. They're the second F that I've given out.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like you said, Matisse Thybulle, they actually traded up to get him. I think it was, what, the 22nd pick they traded?
Yeah.
With Boston to get up to the 20th pick to take Thybulle. They took Mario Šajak with the – I believe it was the 54th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that was also a bad pick. I didn't like either of these picks. Thybulle was mid-40s on my board. Just the prospect of a wing that cannot shoot, that scares me right now. And
isn't that what Philly needs, though, is a shooter?
They do need a shooter, and Matisse Thybulle wasn't a shooter at Washington. He was, you know, just like a defensive playmaker. And I'm not high on Thybulle. Apparently the Sixers are. I guess that's cool. They traded up for him. I said earlier that I can't ever get mad at a team going up and going and getting their guy. So I don't know. I don't like this fit at all. I don't like the value either. But again, I'm going to give them a D just because they go up, they get their guy.
You know, we talked early. I wouldn't really say early in the draft process. We had discussed – on one of the, I think it was the very first OTG mock draft that we did podcast, you had mentioned that Thybulle had received a draft promise. Could it have been from the Sixers?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It probably was. They were a team that was linked to Thybulle all along. I don't know. You start to look at guys in that 20 to 24 range. It might have been the OKC Thunder. They needed a two, probably one that can shoot. I don't know. Maybe a replacement for Andre Roberson. That's what they were looking for. I don't know. I didn't love the fit. It probably could have been the Spurs as well, I guess, just because they had two first-round picks. I just didn't love the fit, didn't love the value. But, you know, I can always respect a team going up, trading up for a guy that they want.
I brutally, honestly don't like it just because I don't think that Thybulle is a first-round prospect. I think that he's a guy who I love the on-ball defense, and I love the team defense that he can play within a system. But he's Andre Roberson-esque in terms of his offense. Maybe a tad bit better, but even then, that's not anything to brag about. So I wasn't too high on that. But talking about going up and getting your guy, the Phoenix Suns. Going to get Cam Johnson at number 11. Now, and they eventually traded back into the first round to get Ty Jerome at 24, which, I mean, I'm not too impartial to because I think that Jerome could be a decent fit in Philly. There's just not too big of a ceiling. I like him as a backup point guard. But Cam Johnson here at 11, potentially the best shooter in the class. I mean, we've talked about his numbers in college and 47%, which is huge for a volume shooter like Johnson and for his size. But to get him here at 11, there's just not too much of an upside to see true value in this selection.
Look, there was a report after the draft, and I'm like trying very hard not to laugh at the Suns right now. But the report said that the Suns weren't very involved in their draft process this year, especially James.
I believe it. Jones. I believe it.
Yeah, and so what this report said, it's from Sam Vecenie from The Athletic, a credited writer, senior writer for The Athletic. He said, according to his sources, that the Suns took a guy that they were, quote, familiar with.
That's crazy.
And, you know, because he went to a big school and could shoot.
Oh, man. I mean, that would make sense, though, right? Because let's just take a look in the past 5 years of what the Suns have done in the first round. I mean, Dragan Bender, bust. Marquise Chriss, bust. I'm pretty sure there's probably more. Josh Jackson, most likely a bust. But, I mean, Devin Booker, I mean, sure, you get one out of four. DeAndre Ayton, I mean.
DeAndre Ayton either.
If you do your homework there, Luka Doncic is he's the top player for sure. But I mean, I guess you can somewhat understand the Ayton pick because they did need help in the front court, but definitely wasn't the best prospect there. But that makes sense. You bring that up, and it makes sense that they don't put a lot of time into their draft analysis, and that's probably something that they need to do.
And look, they traded away TJ Warren, they gave away a pick to get off of his contract. That is a good contract for a player.
That's one of the most contract friendly. That's one of the best contracts in terms of value potentially in the NBA. I mean, the guy is not getting paid over $13 million annually, and he had his career year last year averaging like 18.9 on over 40% shooting from deep. What else can you ask for?
I mean, look, they added Dario Saric, but, you know, they get off of TJ Warren's contract only to add more salary in Aron Baynes and Dario Saric. That's just – this was an inexcusable draft. They completely failed in every possible way. I'm not in love with Dario Saric. I think he's an average starter in the NBA.
They have one job.
They did have one job. Jarrett Culver was right there. He would have been the perfect fit. Maybe Coby White. I know I wanted a facilitator for this team, and there wasn't really one available. I've said that on multiple times. However, this draft was so horrendously bad for the Phoenix Suns. I think if I were a Phoenix fan, I would have just like given up all hope on draft night this year.
Well, I think, to be honest with you, if you're a Phoenix Suns fan, there's a good chance that you've already given up all hope. And I mean, we talk about that. This is the second lowest grade that I've given out to any team. To the Suns, they get an F. I mean, in my opinion, that's what it is. That's what it is. I think that there's one team lower, and I think that's the last team we'll talk about tonight. But that's a little bit down the road. So moving on to this Portland pick, I wasn't too mad about it. I think that there's a lot of potential still left in Nasir Little, a young guy, just didn't have a good year at North Carolina. Well, we've talked numerous times about his role, his fit, what he did offensively or lack thereof, what he did. But, I mean, to get him here at 25, a potential playmaker at a wing that you can stick beside Lillard and CJ McCollum, I got to say that I like the gamble here.
Yeah, I love the gamble. They need a guy really just like a third option. And if Little pans out, I think he's a boomer bust guy. I don't think he's an average starter. I think he's either an above average starter or a bust. So to get a guy who's versatile defensively and can complement CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard, somewhat in the front court, I think that's really good. His feel for the game, it's not good. But, you know, this late in the first round, you've seen the Trailblazers take risks on picks all the time these past couple of years, especially with Anfernee Simons last year. So I love this pick. I wasn't too high on Nasir Little, but I mean, I don't know. I'm in love with this fit. So it's a B+ for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. I had him pegged at a B. This next one, this is one that I've literally sat. I sat for 5-10 minutes trying to decide what in the hell I'm going to give the San Antonio Spurs. I mean, they got Luka Samanich, however you pronounce his last name, at 19 with their first one. You Keldon Johnson at 29, which I think was a bit of a steal. I thought was going to go higher than that, especially leading up to it. I thought he was going to be a guy that maybe even could be in play at Boston at 14, but wasn't the case for sure. And then at 49, they got Quindary Weatherspoon out of Mississippi State. I ended up giving them a B minus, and okay. I thought that was a little generous. I mean, I think that Samanich can turn into a potential four spacing power forward if he adds a little weight. He's very mobile for his size, which really kind of stood out when you watch his game tape and film. But he's just a raw prospect, and I'm not sure how his game really translates to an athletic league like the National Basketball Association. I love the Keldon Johnson fit. I think that if you're going to get sent to an organization that can get the most out of your talent, well, what better organization to go to than Central Texas to the Spurs? And Quindary Weatherspoon, I mean, just kind of a filler pick, probably a guy who's going to play a lot in the G League, maybe a rotational fit if he pulls all the right strings on his development. But I end up going with a B- with the Spurs. Please tell me I'm not crazy.
The Spurs, they just kind of like, they sat where they were and they took talented players. They didn't get players that were ready now, but they took talented players. Keldon Johnson is one of the most talented basketball players in this draft class. He's not one of the best right now, but he could be. Luka Šamanić, I'm not overly high on him. He's got some defensive upside and can really shoot the ball from the four spot. Quindary Weatherspoon, he's just, you know, another guy to me. But he's got some upside. So I think, at least for me, the Spurs can't really ever do wrong, especially with Pop as their head coach and GM and whatever. So for me, at least, it's a B+, maybe a B, just because of the value they had, especially at 19. I think Šamanić was kind of a reach.
Yeah, and the thing with Keldon Johnson, I think it hurt him a little bit when it came up with the combine measurements. I mean, I think he registered in at 6'5", which I think it was kind of a belief that he was more 6'6", 6'7", before the college season, but registering in at 6'5", probably didn't help a little bit just because of the fact that three-point shooting's kind of a sketchy area of his game, although I think that he can turn into a solid perimeter shooter at the next level with the right development. But a lot of people thought of him as a wing. And now it's kind of being looked at as, well, maybe he's just a big two guard. Tweeners don't really do too well when it comes to getting drafted historically, or should I say not resisting a large fall, but tweeners don't really pan out that well when it comes to getting selected where they should, if that makes sense.
I do want to talk about this Kings draft. We kind of just like skipped over them. It's an F. They had three picks in the second round, and they took players. One of them was the last player on my board at 100 overall, Justin James, 40th overall pick. And one wasn't even on my board. I've never heard of this person.
Vanja Marinkovic. Looks like it's a guy that they just said, okay, last pick of the draft, give me a name.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Guy is a guy. He's like...
He's a good college player.
Him. He's like a six even shooting guard, I guess. I don't think he can play make at all. But I don't know. Justin James is that was a horrible pick. I'm just going to be honest. And yeah. So was the other guy, 60 overall. I can't even pronounce his name. Kyle Guy is the only reasonable one at 55 overall. And even he, I don't think, should have been drafted.
Yeah, I look at all three of these guys, and to be honest, I mean, the only one that I thought maybe would have got drafted if all goes right for him and he excels in his workouts was Kyle Guy, just because he's a known face, and people know him because he had just won a national title. He's one of the better shooters in college based upon his percentages, but besides shooting, I mean, he's not going to impose he's not going to impose as a threat on anything but shooting, and it's going to be interesting to see if he could even get shots off at the next level when guys are bigger, better, faster, stronger. So
He's going to get horrible defensively too.
Oh, he's going to get – I just don't even want to think about the switching that's going to be done. You don't even need to switch. You're going to get burned by the other team's point guard. I mean, the guy, he's the epitome of a good college player, just not going to be a good pro. And you know that sometimes that's how it is. But I'm just glad he's not back at Virginia just for my team's sake.
The Toronto Raptors had one pick.
Hernandez.
Yeah, DeJuan. I actually like this pick. He was 56, 57 on my board. They took him at 59. I think that he could end up sticking in the NBA. I think it's a long shot, but I think he has a chance. All it really depends on is if his jump shot develops. There were some signs that it could, especially in workouts and the pre-draft process and whatever, but he didn't really take any shots at Miami. He was just, you know, your prototypical, you know, 1990s power forward, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, there's not too much really to look into this pick. I gave it a B minus just because I think that it's one of those. It's hard to give an A to a team when you're picking with the second to last pick. I mean, this is a guy that you cross your fingers that he might be something in the league. But I mean, all signs point to if everything works out, might be a rotational big that they can throw in, especially with Marc Gasol getting up there in age, and it's not even known if he's coming back next year. And Serge Ibaka is getting older, so there's a lot to be said there about maybe getting a younger big in there to get some garbage time minutes.
Yeah, I'll give it a B with this one.
So moving on, Utah. I have to say, the first pick with Jarrell Brantley, I thought that there were better prospects on the board, but the last two I liked.
I love the last two picks so much.
I absolutely liked Justin Wright Foreman. I know that he's a guy that a lot of people had pegged for the later second round, and for good reason. I think that he's going to be a guy out of Hofstra, correct?
Hofstra point guard, 6'3".
I love the pick here. I mean, he's one of the guys that you don't really know too much about him because he played at a mid-major, but he is a solid guard.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I've seen their first two picks play in the same game, actually. I watched the Colonial Athletic Association, CAA, something like that. But yeah. They actually had their tournament where I live, so I got to see these first two picks play in action, both of their games, I think, twice. So Justin Wright Foreman, he put up like 43 or so points in like a semifinal game, which is just like he put the team on his back. He was hitting all kinds of shots. He's one of the most talented scorers, all three levels. He's strong. He can facilitate a little bit. But Jarrell Brantley, he can kind of shoot. I mean, he's not like he. That's not going to be his calling card. His calling card is going to be strength and rebounding. He's 6'7", 255, which is just like really big. He's a buff guy, so I think if he can rebound and if he can shoot, then he could maybe stick. They had three picks. My favorite pick of all three of them is Mieyoni. He was, you know, mid-30s guy for me. You know, 6'6", with like a 7-foot wingspan, which is just like insane. These are like three of my favorite second round players, and they got all three of them in the 50s. So I don't know. I love this draft. It's an A for me.
It goes without saying, and it gets overlooked, and there's different people put different amounts of stock into this. Oni comes from Yale.
Yeah.
To even go to an Ivy League school, you have to have an intelligence level that is superior to most of the human race in the United States, especially from a basketball. I mean, maybe they give a little lenience basketball wise, but still, I mean, the character is there. I mean, he's a smart player. I think that there's a chance that all three of these guys could have futures with the Jazz because there's so much uncertainty with that roster outside the backcourt and Rudy Gobert. So, oh man, we are here. So, I'm gonna spin this a little bit. We're gonna use Post Malone song references with this one. This whole season, it's been an I Fall Apart vibe for the Washington Wizards. They take this pick, and turn into a whole better now vibe, thinking that they've done something. And it could not have been the biggest you played yourself moment in NBA draft history.
Did you see the press conference?
Yeah. How are you going to ask your lottery, your top 10 lottery pick, if he can shoot a three? He said, "I think so." Yeah, well, I hope so.
And he can't.
He cannot. Rui Hachimura going ninth to the Washington Wizards is a disgrace. Now, with all due respect, Mr. Hachimura, I hope you have the most illustrious NBA career in history, because like, I'm not going to wish any ill will. But I'm taking this from a dissection analysis standpoint. This move makes no sense for the Wizards. They're trying to revitalize their franchise. I mean, they are on the verge of a full-on fire sale. And they say, you know what? We're going to add more uncertainty. We're going to take Rui Hachimura. And then we're going to go and we're going to take Admiral Schofield at 42, which, you know, I'm not too opposed to. I mean, it's kind of one of the low-risk, low-reward. I think Schofield, at the very most, will be a rotational backup guy in the backcourt. But, man, the Wizards have been given the lowest grade in my book, the clown hat. Rui Hachimura at 9. He's not even a first-round prospect on my board. I definitely know he's not on your board. What do you think their rationale was to take Hachimura here?
I don't know what it is, because they didn't even have a general manager making this pick.
They went the Suns. I mean, I guess maybe to address front court needs, they really, really, really are banking on development.
I mean, he's a 6'8" power forward who can't shoot.
He can't ball by the dribble either.
Yeah, he's not a ball handler by any means. He's not a facilitator. He's just like, he's less than average on defense, average athleticism. This pick makes no sense whatsoever. I'm all for growing the game of basketball. I love international prospects. I was really high on Sekou Doumbouya, Goga Batadze. They were both top 10 guys on my board. However, this pick is horrible. I don't even think it's Rui Hachimura.
There's just no way you can spin this and that it makes sense. Like for the there's a couple teams that, yeah, if they take a stab on him, maybe it makes some bit of sense from a roster and system fit. But for the Wizards, who are one, lacking identity, two, lacking perimeter shooting, and three, just lacking any future at all besides John Wall and Brad Beal. I mean, this is rough. Now, the thing about Rui is, you know, I am perhaps maybe one of his biggest critics. You can't take away the fact that he is a class act.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He carries himself tremendously well. He's very fluent in speaking, whether that be in Japanese or in English. I know that there's the language barrier, but he's defeated that. It seems like he's getting better. He's very basketball young, and I know that he's a smart player, and he's a smart person in general, and he's a likable guy, and he's going to be a guy that – the Washington Wizards fan base is going to be able to get behind, especially because of the fact that he's a likable prospect. But, man, outside of potentially a solid mid-range game, which I think he could maybe get to, and maybe some post moves here and there depending on who's guarding him, this just doesn't make too much sense.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you've got so much uncertainty. John Wall, Bradley Beal. Jabari part, like what does
not he even do? Jabari more. I mean, they declined his team option. So not really, unless they bring him back on a friendly deal. I mean, who knows what the, if you're a Wizards fan, I think that if you're a Suns fan, yes, you have lost hope, but you have Devin Booker and you have DeAndre Ayton. If you're a Wizards fan, you have Brad Beal, who has been in trade rumors for almost a year now. You have a franchise point guard who can't stay healthy, probably won't even play next year, has quickly become one of the worst contracts in the NBA. Now you have a prospect who really just doesn't show too much upside. Man, what a time.
They took Troy Brown last year with the 15th pick, and that was a bad pick in itself. To complement Troy Brown with Rui Hachimura is quite possibly one of the worst duos of top 15 picks I have ever seen.
See, I was okay. I could talk myself into the Troy Brown pick, because when you go back and watch him in Oregon, the size is there for the youth. And there is some oozing with offensive potential, because there is a potential three-level game. But I'm just not so sure that he'll ever reach that. This year kind of reaffirmed those suspicions. Hachimura, it just depends. If Boston would have taken him at 14, I probably would have been okay with it, just because they didn't need him to be a franchise centerpiece. The Wizards are kind of banking the future on him.
Not to mention, the Celtics had two other picks. They could have gone other directions.
They had three picks. At this point, they still had all three of their picks.
They could have invested in his development.
I would have been fine with Hachimura going 14th to Boston, to be honest with you, just because there's no risk, really. I mean, sure, he's a lottery pick, but right now for the Celtics, you're looking at competing for an NBA title. I mean, he's a guy that if you plug into a second unit, I mean, he can give you good minutes, and he could be a guy that really bolsters a team in his own way. But, man, this just doesn't make sense. It frustrates me so much. I immediately said a prayer when Washington sent the ballot in.
Bad teams stay bad. Bad teams stay bad. That's the one common occurrence through every single draft, every single year. You know, with the Suns, it's been 3 years in a row now where they haven't drafted a player that, you know, that they should have drafted, whether it was Luka Doncic, whether it was somebody else like De'Aaron Fox with the fourth overall pick for the Phoenix Suns that year. I don't know. I hate when bad teams
stay bad. They literally you tank and you get worse, and you make a selection that makes no sense. Like, I'm sitting there like, what are you doing?
Yeah, look at the Suns. Look at the Suns. They tanked all year. They were tied for the best odds in the draft for Zion Williamson, and they end up with a forward who can't do anything except for shoot, that their general manager took because he was familiar with their name.
Man, I haven't seen a head scratcher like this since Jan Vesely went to the Wizards.
Yeah, and the Wizards took Hachimura. So
I'm sitting there like, man, I mean, what's going on in D.C.? Is the political turmoil turning over into the sports? I mean, at this point, I'm just like, what is going on with the Wizards? If you're a free agent trying to prove yourself and trying to prove that you should get paid, go to Washington by all means, because the playing time is going to be there. The playing time is definitely going to be there.
They might give you a max contract at this point.
I mean, man, I'm telling you, to go a little bit off topic just before we get out of here, I'm sitting there, a lot of rumors before draft leading up to it was that Houston was going to try to trade into it, and I'm a frequent visitor of the Clutch Fans message board, which is pretty much the official message board of the Rockets fans and all other Houston sports fans and stuff like that. But, you know, they're talking about prospects that they should trade up for. And they're like, I literally read a post and it said, we need to trade up for a guy with high upside and who can shoot the ball. I say we go after Hachimura. And I don't usually post on these boards, but I quoted it and I said, man, do me a favor. Watch a game of Hachimura's.
Yeah.
And pay attention to how much of his weaknesses are actually hidden because he's playing next to Brandon Clark.
Exactly. As Stephen A. Smith would say, it's bad.
It's really real bad. I'm just, when Washington made the pick, I'm the meme of Stephen A. with the straight face. He looks like he's sleep deprived and he's just sitting there. I mean, I haven't been this confused for a pick since the New York Knicks went with Porzingis. Now, obviously, I had to eat crow with that one.
At least there
was reasoning behind that pick, because Porzingis had a lot of potential there, and you saw it within the film. I just don't see what a lot of draft experts saw. Like, Jay Billis had Hachimura as his 10th best prospect. Now, I know Billis is a college basketball guy, but for a pro trajectory in terms of, like, what does he see? What does he see that I don't see? What does he see that you don't see? Are we missing something? Are we just overlooking a part of his game that we are severely undermining?
Okay, I mean, I just have a problem with Jay Billis in general. Like, he had DeAndre Hunter listed as a guard, and that's
I saw that. He's the exact – there was somebody that said, yeah, with the 8th and the 10th, yeah, let's go with guard DeAndre Hunter and forward Jarrett Culver. I'm like, no.
Yeah, that was – that one was – like, he had – I think it was Kevin Porter as a forward.
No. Why? Hunter's like 6'8", and he's built nothing like a guard.
Like, I'm 90% sure Jay Billis just, like, goes, like, he decides the positions off of measurements.
Even then, though, I mean, how do you, 6'8", I understand, like, Cam Johnson would be more considered of a guard than DeAndre Hunter just by the way he plays.
Yeah.
And but you've watched Hunter enough to know that he is not a guard. I mean, he covers more ACC games than almost anyone. Come on, man.
Yeah, and he had Doncic at 4 last year, below Ayton, below Bagley, and below like someone else weird. I can't remember who it was. I know it wasn't Jackson, but I don't know. I don't like Jay Billis. He's one of the worst draft experts that I can.
I think he's a great college basketball analyst.
Oh yeah,
I love listening to the guy. He's a class act. He's a very likable dude. I mean, there's nothing not to like about him except for maybe his ACC favoritism, which doesn't bother me, and I know it doesn't bother you.
Oh no, but, absolutely not.
But man, just to kind of touch a little bit on that draft with Doncic, with Ayton, can you cut the Suns a bit of slack for taking Ayton?
No, not really.
What about Sacramento?
Sacramento, I mean,
Bagley looks like he's gonna. He had a little bit of a rough start, but he looks like he turned the corner.
I don't know. I just don't get the value of taking a power forward over a guard wing in this NBA.
If Doncic plays in college for a year, does he go number one overall?
If Doncic played in college last year, he'd be putting up 35 a game.
That boy good.
He was better than I think he would have been higher on a big board than Zion this year.
Which one would you start if you had a chance to start your franchise right now with either one of them? Who would you take and why?
I would take Doncic. I think his game lasts a lot longer than Zion's, just because you know the whole weight thing with Zion, and you know Doncic is a good shooter. Zion, you know, he's an average shooter. I just think he fits the modern NBA a little bit better. And of course, he could still slim down and become even better than what he already is. So,
I'd take him higher than Trae Young as well.
I'd take Zion over Trae Young.
That's kind of where, you know, I hate the people that say, "Oh, Trae Young's the rookie of the year." No, he's not. Stop.
No, absolutely.
You're playing yourself. There's literally. I understand recency bias may be a thing, and it kind of it gets old watching Doncic go off, kind of like it gets old watching Harden drop 40 a night.
No,
well, for me it doesn't, but for all the casual Twitter referees and Twitter GMs it does, because it's only from free throws and flops. But I mean, I guess the thing that I'm trying to get across, and I know you're trying to get across as well, is when you look at why the good teams are good and why the bad teams remain bad, a lot of it has to do with free agency, because you got to be able to lure the free agents. But it starts and it ends with the NBA draft. The Golden State Warriors.
I think it's, you know, like it's a groupthink mentality.
It is.
You scout internally. You don't reference anything from the internet, any other teams. You scout internally. So as soon as, you know, that GM starts listing players that he's higher on than most, I think people inside of that organization are, you know, going to do the same.
Exactly. And the thing about it is like, you mentioned paying attention to the media. I mean, any Joe Blow can put a mock draft on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And it literally has no credibility. And even the guys who do have credibility, like Sam Vecenie and Jonathan Givony or Givony and all the other top-name guys, and not to dock them or disrespect them at all, because they are truly the best at what they do. But at the same time, if you're an NBA GM, their opinion should not matter one damn bit. Yeah. Because you are in your position for a reason. And that shows you everything you need to know about your GM is, one, his ability to draft well, but kind of branching off of that is to hire people who can advise him, because he's not going to be able to spend all of his time on draft scouting. You have to get a good scouting team. Like the Golden State Warriors, I mean, Draymond Green, drafted. Klay Thompson, drafted. Steph Curry, drafted. Harrison Barnes, drafted. I mean, it goes down the list. The good teams usually start from good draft picks.
Exactly. And I just want to touch on something else. What on earth is Chauncey Billups thinking?
What'd he do?
Did you watch the ESPN draft?
I did. But I was at work for some of it, so a lot of it I had to follow. I had Woj's tweets on notifications, so I didn't get to watch too much of it. But do I even want to hear what he said?
Well, it's with every single pick. So, you know, they're going through the picks. You know, they're like analyzing all these guys, and you know they'll cut over to Chauncey for an NBA player.
Oh my goodness, there were some of those, and I did get to see some. And there, I forget which one it was, because I sat there and I said, hold on.
All right, so I wasn't really, like, I was switching between that, the Ringer, and, you know, just like Twitter in general. So I look over to the TV, you know, 9th overall pick, Wizards take Hachimura. Billups is smiling, and he's comparing Rui Hachimura to Kawhi Leonard.
Oh man, hold on. Pause, rewind, take it back. Oh, man. That – give me your mic. I am baffled. We've been absolutely bamboozled. That is crazy. I need an audio right now of Stephen A. Smith going off, because that's nuts.
So, I mean, it doesn't stop there either. Like, he was comparing essentially every single lottery pick taken to, like, NBA, like, all NBA caliber players. Like, Cam Reddish is apparently Paul George.
I mean,
okay, like, every single one of these players got, like, all NBA comparisons. But the one I feel bad for is DeAndre Hunter, because he said, like, he gave, you know, Paul George, Cam Reddish, Kawhi Leonard to Rui Hachimura, some other ones like Nasir Little, PJ Washington, you know, all these other guys like Jarrett Culver. So you get, he like 4th overall pick, you know, Lakers/Pelicans/Hawks select DeAndre Hunter, cut over to Chauncey Billups, and it's Jay Crowder for DeAndre Hunter.
Oh man, that's, I mean,
it's cold.
You need to be like Stephen A. Smith. You're not wrong, but you didn't have to go there. I mean, the one that I found interesting was the fact that they said Zion plays a lot like Julius Randle, and I like that to an extent. I think he's a more talented Julius Randle, obviously, but their bully ball style of play definitely alludes to that being a good comparison. So, but I mean, we could go on and on about that. Real quickly, best overall draft from a team. I'm not even going to ask for your worst, because we already know. Out of Minnesota and out of Cleveland, which one do you give the crown to?
Just best overall draft. Cleveland got 2 of my top 5 players, so I got to give the edge to them.
Yeah, I'm going with New Orleans just because of the fact that they got Zionology. They got Nikhil Alexander-Walker, which I think is going to be a very underrated selection for what he's going to be able to provide. And I like the Jackson Hayes fit as well. I like the fact that they set themselves up nicely for the future with that pick and got rid of Solomon Hill in the process. So, I mean, but it's been fun. I mean, definitely is something that, you know, we continue to think of podcast ideas and themes and just roll with it. So, I mean, it's definitely something that I enjoy.
Real quick, who's your top 5, just like way, way too early top 5 next year?
You talking about like prospects?
Yes.
Oof. So, I've got James Wiseman and I've got Anthony Edwards at 1 and 2. I mean, you can hit the reverse button on both of those. I really haven't decided who I like as my top prospect. I like Cole Anthony as the third one out of North Carolina. Theo Maledon, the combo guard out of France, would have to be at my fourth position. And I'm really taking a stab on this one, but I'm going with LaMelo Ball at 5.
Wow. Wow.
Right now, just because I believe the talent, I believe that it's there. I believe that with the right coaching and less ball family or antics, I think that a year in Australia could do him well. But, I mean, the guy, he's uber talented. What can we say? If he gets the right mindset, he could be one of the best prospects in this class. So, I know you're not too high on him. Is there any other of the top five you would change?
So, I'm just going to give you my top seven. These are my first two tiers of players just as it is right now. My first tier, 1, 2, 3. First is Cole Anthony. Again, these first three are interchangeable, essentially. Like, all three of these are on an even playing field. We're going to have to see what they can do at their respective colleges. But first is Cole Anthony. He's going to be a guard at UNC. Then we got Anthony Edwards, a combo guard. Probably going to be more of a two, though, for Georgia. And at three, James Wiseman, a big for Memphis. So those are my top three. And then these next four, again, are essentially interchangeable. RJ Hampton's number four. He's going to be playing in Australia for the Breakers, I believe. So it's
he's right on the outside of my top five, and I'm starting to become higher and higher on RJ. So, honestly, you could even slide him into five for me.
Yeah, I mean, he's a playmaker. He's one of the better shooters in this class. So I like Theo Maledon as well. He's fifth for me right now, guard out of France. Then we got Nico Mannion, a guard for Arizona. So I really like him. He's kind of athletic, can really do it all from the point guard position. So look for him at Arizona. And then Danny Adija, guard out of Israel. I think he's like 6'8", so he's a bigger guard.
Skinny, like, gotta add some weight, though, because he is a twig.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's got to work on that shot as well, so. I don't know.
It's going to be fun. I mean, it's definitely a bit of an overwhelming task to start your scouting on the 2020 class, but you got to start somewhere. Where else better to start than the top guys?
Oh, yeah. Yep, but do you have any final thoughts on the 2019 NBA draft? Either like one of your more favorite picks or guys who fell? What do you think?
Well, Kevin Porter falling, obviously, for you and I is a mistake. And it made me sick to my stomach that he fell to 30 because I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. But Cam Johnson to 11 I thought was a big mistake for Phoenix. But, I mean, what do I know? I do about as much scouting as they do, apparently. So, I mean, what's there to say that hasn't already been said? What about you?
I really like the Fion Dukebwengele pick. I like the Ball pick for Denver, just because now they've got two high upside guys that are going to be coming off of injuries. PJ Washington, I know I kind of grilled him earlier, but he's starting to grow on me, you know, as a Hornets fan. I guess I kind of have to like him now. I keep looking at that Utah Jazz draft, Jarrell Brantley, Justin Wright Foreman, and Mie Ioni. That draft, they
– It's good. Good class for them.
They hit every single pick, and they had three picks in the 50s.
Right.
That is
high upside, low up. I mean, they got their guy, Mike Conley, which they trade their first round for, and then they got three guys that really could potentially be guys going forward that are found within the future of the Utah Jazz. But, Dylan, I got to say, man, your Twitter on draft night, I was worried about you for a little bit. Especially at the end of the draft, you know, there was so much optimism or at least hope that the Hornets wouldn't screw it up. And it looks like they had done so.
Yeah. I was like Stephen A. Smith, Kristaps Porzingis levels mad. It was bad. It was really, really bad. just from PJ Washington, you know, it's almost like they were settling for mediocrity. They were. And that's like the whole thing that bothers me, because the Hornets have been mediocre for three and a half years now. So it bothers me that they, you know, just didn't take a swing on a guy. And I guess I get it, but at the same time, you're trying to get Kemba Walker to stay and you got zero exciting prospects.
So. Last note before we head out, just came across my phone, Luka Doncic, the officially set in stone, the 2018-19 Rookie of the Year in the NBA. Well deserved for him. Congrats to him. So, Dylan, where can they find you on social media?
Yeah, at Dylan Jackson NBA. Go follow me on Twitter. I am a contributor at the Rookie Wire, OTG Basketball, and the Queens Guard.
So you can find me at DPenceNBA on Twitter. You can find this episode of the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, all that good stuff. Make sure to get a Zionology t-shirt. We officially have them in New Orleans Pelicans colors. They are going out fast. There's a lot of other OTG brand merch that you can cop today. I believe we have a little bit of a promo going on. I believe you can get, $10 off with the promo code America, if I'm not too mistaken. I don't know if that's still going on.
America 10.
America 10.
Better hurry.
Yes, I mean, I would assume it'd probably expire on July 4th, it would seem. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Check out, there's a lot of stuff going with free agency, a free agent preview for seemingly every guy who doesn't have a contract right now. The OTG draft team will continue to put out the content that is needed and wanted by the populace of Twitter. So, I mean, it's been nice. Dylan, any last thoughts?
Yeah, that was a it was a frustrating but also entertaining draft cycle. Just from the combine, from, you know, all the pre-draft workouts, Rui Hachimura and him not going to the Hornets like I thought he originally would. And yeah, you know, there are a lot of teams that are going to look back on this draft and regret what they did, but there's also going to be a lot of teams that love what they did.
Exactly.
And they're going to have, you know, franchise changing pieces. So we had a lot of negative in the second part of the draft, especially discussing the Wizards and Suns. However, you know, I really like what the Timberwolves did, really love what the Cavs did. So you look back on this draft, some of these teams could be completely different in 2 to 3 years.
They could. And I guess that's the beauty of it. I mean, it's a love-hate relationship with the draft for Rockets fans, because we haven't had a first-round pick since 2015. We always trade them away to try to get better. I guess there's beauty in the struggle, in the sense that I don't have to worry about my team screwing it up. I mean, second-round picks are second-round picks, and some have panned out, some haven't for us. But at the end of the day, the stress, there would be so much more stress if the Rockets actually had a first-rounder, albeit it would be late. But, I mean, I get to look at it from a sort of unbiased set of eyes because of the Rockets not being in there. So there's that.
I mean, yeah. But the Rockets, they're good. They've got a superstar. They've got Chris Paul. I guess he's
mid. I don't even think he'll be able to get past me playing one-on-one, to be honest with you. I mean,
Shamori Ponds, starting point guard.
I will take it. Give me Shamori Ponds right now. I mean, I love the fact that they're going to get undrafted talent. I love that. I love Chris Clemens. There's a couple other guys that they're looking at it potentially getting too. So I'm interested to see Summer League. Summer League, I think, is like, what, 2 weeks away, maybe? A week away?
July 5th.
So next Friday, not this one, but the next one. So, I mean, have a good 4th of July, and then we turn around and we talk Summer League. So,
yeah.
Mr. Jackson, always a pleasure, my man.
Yeah, you too. And, yeah, this was a fun draft cycle. Always nice to recap the picks, what teams messed up, what teams didn't. So, any final thoughts, Dalton?
I've said it all I need to say.
All right. Peace, guys.